Welcome to Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen, and as you can see, I am joined tonight by two very good friends of mine. One is James Ingram, who's been on here before, and the other is Brother Jacob Israel, who has actually been everywhere with me forever. And how are you, Jacob?
Feeling good, like a Hebrew should. How you doing today, Case?
I'm doing great. And James, how are you?
Doing well, Mark. How are you?
I'm excellent. I've been running around town, and I just got here 1 minute ago. And actually, you can see from what I'm holding up here on the screen, you know, me and my St. Louis Suit Company ties. So this is a brand new one. It's a Susan Komen tie, which is really nice, actually. He offered me another one, which was an American flag tie. Did you think I was going to take that one, Jacob?
I don't know, Petra.
Now, let me ask you this, Mark. I can't even see you, so I can't even... Sounds to me like you're just making it up.
No, wait a second. You cannot see me on the screen.
I can't. Maybe Jacob can see you, but I can't. So I don't know what's going on. Maybe talk to your engineer.
Well, no. Yeah, because everything's fine. In fact, I see you perfectly. And Jacob, you see James also?
Correct.
Okay. So
I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's something I need to enable here. Or
yeah.
Said disable.
Might be. Oh,
I don't know.
He said refresh, but, you know.
You want me to do that?
You could do that.
I can try.
I'll talk to Jacob while you're doing that. So here's the thing, Jacob. Let's clarify a couple of things here.
Okay.
One thing is you call me Fetcher, and you know, people don't always know what that means.
Why don't you explain it to them?
I'm happy.
Now I can see you.
There you go.
Hallelujah.
Refreshing is always a good thing to do. Okay, so the reason that I'm called Fetcher is because in the next lifetime, I will be fetching you wine.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, and I don't even know the whole story, but I know that much. I will be.
That's right.
I will be fetching wine.
So, that's right.
And I can do that because, as I've always said, in the next lifetime, hey, I can't even begin to guess. So if that's my, you know, my destiny, then that'll be okay.
You'll probably get a few extra, Jacob. I think he's deserving of a few more lashes.
I got the book of lashes right here, brother.
In true case and fashion, he's got two black men working on Juneteenth.
That's right.
Yeah,
I got the book of lashes handy. Don't worry, partner.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, and the other thing, which is quite amazing, is you know the old saying, you sure are older now because you were younger once. You know the reference, the song. I don't even know.
You tell it.
I don't even know who did it, but the bottom line is that's us, because we sure were younger once.
Yeah, we was.
We were.
Yep. That was a little while ago. Anyway, here we are on Juneteenth, which, I mean, I'm so thrilled that the government ended up turning this into a national holiday. And I know if our good friend, the prisoner, could have been here, although he's, you know, gone off somewhere. Do you know where do people go, Jacob? You would normally have some idea.
He went 6 feet deep in reserve for the judgment.
Oh, okay, there you go. Okay. Well, at any rate, the prisoner, you know, he would, you know, be talking about Oklahoma.
No doubt.
Yeah, for sure. And,
no doubt.
And of course, we could also be talking about East St. Louis, where in 1915 there was a massacre.
Race riot.
Well, yeah, they call it a race riot, but it was actually a massacre of black people by white people, right?
It was actually 1917, but it was a massacre nonetheless.
Yeah,
no doubt. The Hebrews running over that damn bridge, jumping into the Mississippi River get away from the white mob.
That's right.
I remember that. I remember that.
It was horrendous, and I think that's been a historical mischaracterization of it as a riot. You know, a riot is what you saw on January 6th, I guess, when Trump threw his tantrum in the when he lost the election.
That's right.
A massacre is when you have helpless black people just trying to come from work and being just slaughtered and their homes firebombed. And as they tried to run out for safety, just being shot down by a bunch of a mob of racists, actually they were shooting the wrong people, Mark. They were shooting people who came up from the South to get jobs. And fact, they should have been mad at the persons who owned the industries who sent for them to displace white workers.
Sure. Well, the other thing is, you know, there's a guy here in St. Louis who is a professor over at Washington University. His name is Jeff Ward. And he has written extensively, and I mean done terrific research, to show that the places in the United States where there is the greatest amount of violence in black communities happen to be places where white people have committed violence against black people historically.
Correct. Correct. You know, and that brings me to this Juneteenth case. You know, Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. January 1st, 1863, we're supposed to all be free, right? It didn't take until, June 19th, 1865, 2,000 victorious Union troops arrived down in Galveston, Texas, and had to tell 250,000 of my ancestors that y'all free by executive order. Now, you know, to me, Juneteenth is an insult. Man, I can only imagine the degradation that them people had to endure. Even after the Civil War was ended, them racist heathens down there kept them in them plantations, kept putting a whip to their back, kept the whipping, the castration going until 2,000 Union troops showed up to Galveston, Texas, to tell them that they was free. I don't know about you, Brother Ingram, but that's an insult to your brother Jacob. What you think?
Highly, highly insulted to think that it took 2.5 years for this to happen. You know, you worked 250,000 people for free for an additional, forget the 300 and some odd years prior to
that. That's right. That's right.
For an additional 2.5 years, you had this this racist government and regime down in Galveston, Texas, where when General Granger showed up and his troops to free us. And, you know, it's not much different. And if you go to Texas, if you visit Texas, I've been to Galveston, I've been to Houston, I've been to Dallas and San Antonio.
It's still racist.
Governor Abbott is not far removed from the mindset of those who were in charge back during that day.
He just let a heathen go who killed a protester during a George Floyd protest.
Mm-hmm.
Tried, convicted, in prison. He pardoned that heathen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wonder why I pray for tornadoes to come and turn my new ass. Then they wonder why a brother like me don't want to hear nothing about no apologies, no mealy-mouth excuses. Man, they still as racist today as them heathens who kept our ancestors enslaved for 2 extra years. And I guarantee they were not compensated for those 2 years of more slave labor that they had to endure. And I guarantee you that the children of those heathens are still down there to this day. What you think, Brother Ingram?
Absolutely. you know, and this is what's interesting. If you've seen pictures of Governor Abbott, he's in a wheelchair.
I'll push his ass down a flight of steps as quick as I can blink. Go ahead, Brother Ingram.
I'll take one side of the wheelchair, you take the other side.
There you go.
But just the thing, you would think a person that is an invalid would have some sensitivity and some humanity. But he still has his hardened heart. You know, at every turn, you know, I don't want to refer to him as a MAGA Republican. I think that'd probably be an insult to them. He's just a beast of his own.
But let's not forget this, because this is the key to it all. He's white. Right?
It's a white supremacy mindset.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, like, I mean, the country forgets this.
They say that this is a national holiday, right? You know, my job ain't told me nothing about this was a national holiday. Didn't give me the option to take the day off. I'm talking about the corporate plantation that I work on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even in corporate America, they don't consider this no national holiday. They consider this a nigger day. Let's be serious, sir. And man, right. Truth be told, like I say, it's an insult to me. Juneteenth. What does that mean to me? What it mean to you, brother?
Well, I've been aware of and have acknowledged that history for a number of years. And people that I know that are conscious, whose jobs don't recognize this as a holiday, have been taking off work for years. The same way Jewish people take off on the high holidays on their job, the same way the Catholics take off on their jobs on their high holidays. And it should be, and this is what I want to say. I don't know how you think about this, Jacob, but what I don't want this to become is for this to devolve into what these other holidays have become. It's fine that we're off, some of us, but at the same time, this is a teachable moment for our young people, many of whom think that they got it made. They don't know anything about Black Wall Street. They don't know anything about the massacre in East St. Louis. They don't know anything about Juneteenth. They don't know anything about this. But as Blacks who've been Americanized, we tend to do the same crazy things that they do on St. Patrick's Day, that they do on Cinco de Mayo, that they do on all these other Americanized holidays, just go out and get drunk and turn up and do all these other crazy things rather than use it as a teachable moment about our history and use it as a galvanizing point to get those reparations that I think you spoke about earlier that we've not been compensated. Fine, it's easy to take a pen and sign off a holiday. It's easy to do that. It's another thing entirely to look at what is owed, the concrete debt that's owed to Black people in this country for what we went through for over 300 years in this country, in addition to Juneteenth. So this is how I look at it. It's bittersweet for me. And to an extent, it's a political thing. We know that in the political climate that the Black vote is valued, it's needed. And this is something that they can point to. Look, I gave y'all a holiday instead of what we were really owed, which is a concrete monetary and other debt to make us whole for what happened to us in this country.
Yeah, and by the way, let's clarify this. When they're passing out money, which they won't be doing, of course.
We ain't going to hold our breath.
Exactly. Yeah, we know that white people aren't going to vote for that. So, in fact, they're going to vote strenuously against it. So, you know, that's the thing. But if they were giving out money to anybody, to Black people around the United States, James Ingram and Jacob Israel wouldn't need the money. In other words, I'm just saying, you two guys, you know, you've basically, not basically, you have 100% overcome what white people have done in this country. You guys stand out as people who are smart enough and connected enough mentally with what's gone on to speak up. But the truth is that you're not out here looking for a handout. You're out here looking for justice for an entire group of people. Does that make sense?
We may be the exception and not the rule.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Brother Ingram feel like I do. What you do to the least of my brothers, you do to me.
Yep.
I look at the poverty. I look at the oppression. I look at the blatant racism, the buck-naked hatred that's still being applied to this second to my people. Now, unlike Brother Ingram, I'm a conscious Israelite. So I don't do none of your pagan days. I don't do your Fourth of July. I don't do your pagan Christmases. I don't do your pagan Easters. I'm set apart. So with the Hebrews that I congregate with, and I have a network, well, I fellowship with Israelites all over the world now.
Yeah, give them that information too.
It's the Hebrew Israelite Radio Network. You can check out our website, MrHebrew1.com. Now, Fetch, I'm going to tell you this. I've agonized over the things that have been done to our people. Every show that I do news stories. And I'm still pulling up stories of policemen beating the hell of our people for no reason whatsoever. I'm still looking at the blatant racism that we have to endure. And the thing is, some of my people keep asking for reparations. I tell them to stop. Don't hold your breath waiting on them, because some of these heathens would rather eat their children than give me and Brother Ingram $5. You agree with me on that, Brother Ingram?
Absolutely.
Speak on that.
Let me say this, and I'm going to slightly disagree. Well, I agree with you in terms of I may not be a Hebrew Israelite, but I don't celebrate any of those holidays either.
Okay, go right ahead.
So where I disagree with Mark is that it's this the premise that you and I don't need reparations and we don't need any money. It's not about me individually. It's about my people collectively.
And that's correct.
About generational wealth. Think, you know, I need the money. If it were money, land, all that's owed to us, because we earned it through our labor, through our blood, sweat, and tears, and what we went through in this country. And if you work a people for over 310 years for free,
Thomas Jefferson, the so-called founding fathers of America, were a bunch of cross-dressing. They wore women's wigs. They wore French stockings, buckled heels, and bloomers and panties. Look at the pictures of them.
Oh, yeah.
Goat riders. They were slave owners. They were sitting up on the front porch sipping mint juleps while our people built this country.
Who built it?
Washington, D.C. Black slaves.
That's right.
Who was the driving force, economic force, that made this a superpower? My ancestors. The heathen knows this. Didn't mean to interrupt you, Brother Ingram.
That was an excellent point. I was going to go there. But as Jacob pointed out, if you look at the Capitol, if you look at the White House, if you look at all of these edifices in Washington, D.C., that was built on the back of slave labor. I'm one of these persons, whenever I go south, I tour slave plantations. And I'm looking at these ornate mansions that these people lived in and worked the hell out of us. And we actually built them. And I'm looking at the generational wealth. You know, it's one thing for a white man to tell me what I don't deserve. What I'm looking at, they're fourth and fifth generation college graduates, which means they've been successful for an awfully long time. They passed down financial wealth, real estate, and other wealth to their children so that they don't have to struggle. It's not a big deal for them to go to college. It's not a big deal for them to advance in corporate America or to inherit many of the positions that they have in this country. So where would we be if we weren't working like slaves for 300 years? What wealth would we have? What property would we have? Where would we be? Where would our status be? We got a lot. We have black families in this country that are still first generation college graduates.
Correct.
After 310 years,
it's absurd.
And so, yeah, I want whatever we're entitled to. However, I agree with Jacob. I'm not holding my breath. I did what I was supposed to do, because fortunately, I had parents that were married for 59 years, and grandparents that were married 57 years who told me not to expect anybody to hand me anything, who sacrificed, put second mortgages on their home so that I could attend college, so that I could have a better life than they had. But that's not to say that it should have been that way.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And by the way, what I was going to say is, I mean, the two of you have got the best educations that people could possibly have. You are both highly educated because you're, as you said, the exception. And you were able to overcome a country that said that anybody who looked like you, if you learned how to read, not only did you need to be killed, but the white man who taught you also needed to be killed, right?
Well, case in point, Black Wall Street. Brother Ingram speaking of generational wealth, thinking of generational wealth that was taken from those families. Think about this. Per medium, that was one of the richest per capita communities in this entire country. And one day, led by that racist-ass sheriff department down there, off the lips of a lying-ass white woman, the mob came and burned, looted, and killed everything in that part of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now think about this. Those people woke up that morning millionaires, well off. They owned factories, they owned grocery stores, they had their own hospitals, they had their own movie theaters. In a 24-hour period, generational wealth from those families were wiped out. And get this, not one of those who committed that crime against humanity, against those people, were ever tried. And as a matter of fact, just last week, the racist-ass Oklahoma Supreme Court threw out the lawsuit of the last two remaining survivors. They trying to wait until they die. And you heathens wonder why I pray for the tornadoes to come and tap dance on you. Speak on that, Brother Ingram.
This speaks, and what Jacob is speaking to is this, think about the mental damage, how you damage the spirit of an individual. They had a justified lawsuit. These people that Jacob was speaking of, I think they're about 100 years old.
Man, they over 100 years old. One is 109, the other is 112. They trying to hold on.
And trying to hang on and get some semblance of justice. Think about this mental damage. And there's another aspect to this stuff. When we were oppressed and denied opportunities, those who succeeded, like in the instances of, and there were more than one Black Wall Street. There were other pockets of
Rosewood,
other areas in America where Black self-determination created these enclaves for Black people to exist and have their own. But when you destroy it, you firebomb them, and you just wipe them off the map. Now they got to start from scratch. Now the children who are watching this says, what's the use? Why should we even try to do it? Because they're just going to wipe it off the map if we try to do it. So now people settle, and they determine that there's no hope, that there's no reason to work hard and do all of these things, because this is what will happen to you. So you break their spirit. And I'm, you know, the talk now is about mental health, which is real. There's a lot of mental health issues that are out here, but it came to fruition because white folks are mentally damaged. We've been mentally damaged for hundreds of years in terms of what they've done to our ancestors, to our spirits, and how we, many of us have become broken. The exceptions are those who rise to the top and they achieve the highest levels of education and achievement, but how many fell by the wayside? If they could have been in an insane asylum, they would have been in one. They were just broken men, broken women that were relegated to what we see when we see people like Tim Scott and some of these other coonish.
Byron Donalds.
Man, I'm talking about bootlicking. Boy, I thought Clarence Thomas was a bootlicker. Oh, man, that Scott who said that, or that other one, Byron Donald, who said Jim Crow was good for us.
Right.
Man, I hate them coon Negroes more than I do the Ku Klux Klan. Don't know about you, Brother Ingram. Talk.
I can't. I detest them. And they, make Clarence Thomas look like Malcolm X. Some of the things that they say. And it's just ridiculous. And coonery is rewarded in America. Let's be clear.
Yes, sir.
You wouldn't see Tim Scott and Byron Donalds buck dancing. And what is this other fool, this female coon that is on the radio that her name's escaping me right now. I know you.
Candace Coon Owens.
Yes, Candace Owens. So you got her.
Coonessa.
Oh, yes. And some of the lunacy that she says in terms of, you know, it's clear that she hates herself.
No doubt.
See what she says.
All them Negroes do.
They do. Oh. They're useful tools for the likes of Donald Trump. And they're going to trot them out. And Tim Scott is there. Oh, I love you, Donald Trump. And they trot him out because he's the example. See how you can advance if you just learn the tap dance like Uncle Tim, like Aunt Candace, like Byron. It, you know, that slavery was good for us? I mean, come on. Come on. But the bad part about it is there's such a dearth of education out here about our history and what slavery entailed and what Jim Crow entailed that some people will go along with that nonsense and listen to it and say, well, yeah, we did have a place to live. You know, yeah, we did. You know, we did have something to eat. You know, they take our history and trivialize it and
absolutely
put a black face on it.
Absolutely.
And use them in an electoral season to put a man in the White House who had to be taken, he and his dad had to be taken to federal court because they didn't want us living in his property.
That's right. And wanted the Central Park Five executed, even though the DNA
exonerated. Would not back down after they were exonerated.
That's right.
So this is the kind of man that I try to talk to some of my black brothers and sisters about, who try to tell me, well, they were doing better off under Donald Trump. I think they forgot about all those masks they were wearing for 3 years.
No doubt about it, partner.
When this fool was worried about my numbers, want my numbers to be good. You know, this kind of lunacy.
Talking about injecting folks with bleach, right?
Yeah. How would that work? Can we like get a light and some bleach and how would this fool knows nothing about
a moron
science or anything. And then on top of this, imagine this. We're all college educated people. Can you imagine your college professor saying, this is the dumbest son of a bitch I ever had in class? This is what Donald Trump's professor said about him.
The professor right. Which one is that again? Place he went to?
He went to UPenn.
No, he went to Wharton Business School.
Business School at University of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah, he went to Ivy League School. Yeah. But can you imagine the thousands of people a professor teaches, and you stand out as the dumbest son of a bitch
he ever met?
That's right.
The dumbest.
By the way,
I want to clarify a couple of things really quick. First of all, when you mentioned, you know, Jacob, Lincoln and you know, this, I mean, I can't even believe that we even say it. We call it the Emancipation Proclamation, but
correct.
But what it really said was that if you stay in the Union, you can keep your slaves.
Right.
It didn't say that all the black people are free.
Uncle Abe ain't no hero to me.
Yeah,
he said if he could have kept the Union together,
yes,
no problem. Keep them niggas a slave.
Absolutely.
I remember Mr. Horton making that point time and time and time again. Ain't no hero around here. I don't know about you, brother.
It's a fact. That's a fact, Jacob. He said Lincoln, I believe, to paraphrase him, he said if he could save the Union without freeing one slave, he would.
He would.
But if he could save the Union by freeing them, he would. But it's to Mark's point, the Emancipation Proclamation freed slaves in slave territory.
Correct.
So it was he was very clever with words, and how he strung things together.
He was a lawyer.
Oh yeah. So you know, but people, you know, you would have to read in order to understand those things, and you would have
to be
able to interpret what people have put in front of you, which is why they didn't want us to go to school, because it's you're a dangerous black man in America if you can read,
correct,
if you can write, if you can debate, if you can interpret law, and if you can engage. That is a dangerous person. That's those are the ones they want to kill. They're not worried about Rufus lifting a burlap sack. They're worried about this person that can lift thoughts and ideas.
Correct.
That's the dangerous person. And these are the ones that they try to kill in the classroom. And I don't know what Jacob's experience was, but I was fortunate to go to school in East St. Louis because most of my teachers were Black teachers. And I didn't have anybody in my memory that were trying to kill my thought process. However, once I got to college, I experienced firsthand professors who were trying to overload me in terms of my classes, were trying to misadvise me in terms of my educational pursuits. And that was to keep me in a certain place. I had black counterparts at the same institution that told me when they were in the second and third grade, they had white teachers trying to dissuade them from pursuing education and trying to, if they wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer or something, a scientist, they would try to tell them, you need to let that go. You need to do something you can do. So, and this is born out in history. I think Malcolm X had a similar experience. If you read his autobiography, he said he wanted to be a lawyer. They told him you ought to take up a trade. And there are others that I can name, and if you read autobiographies like I do, where they were dissuaded from pursuing greatness because they knew that if we can read, we can write, we can think, that we would be a dangerous people in terms of not allowing ourselves to be suppressed in this country.
Yeah, and let's face it, there are white people walking around who essentially got their degrees from Walmart, and I just want to point out that you, James, got your degree from Boston University, so yeah, I just thought I'd mention. Listen, another thing too, when you talk about what kind of land was available for white people in America that was not available for blacks, it's important for people to know, which they don't care, but they should know that the way this was done is that under the Homestead Act, they were giving land away to white people if they would simply come out and take care of the land. If they would farm it, they would set something, a ranch or whatever it was. So like, for example, you go out into California and, they have like one of the wealthiest areas there is was the Warner Ranch. I mean, these are areas that were given to white people. These white people didn't earn it. They were given this land. And it was in 1850, so you know who they didn't give the land for obvious reasons in 1850. So
no doubt about it. Hell, they gave away the whole state of Oklahoma. That's where Boomer Sooner come from.
Right.
Told heathens to line up. Here go the starting line. Wherever you get to first and put your plot down is yours. They ain't gave us, hell, the 40 acres and a mule they promised us. You got your 40 acres and a mule, Brother Engel?
I haven't gotten mine, but I can bear witness that I've seen, as Mark referred to them, he said that many of them got their degrees from Walmart. I think that's an insult to Walmart. They were just giving degrees away. I went to, you mentioned Boston University. So if people don't know, it's walking distance to Harvard, it's walking distance to MIT, to a lot of colleges. Boston is just a college town. And I have never met in my days, and I know we got some borderline Neanderthals here in St. Louis, but I have never met more affluent, ignorant people in my life where their grandfather went to the school, or their grandfather and their father went to school, and they were known as what legacies. So that they got admissions to these schools because the dean just had the admission in their pocket, or their parents donated money to the school. You remember famously Dan Quayle went to Harvard and couldn't spell potato.
That's right.
George W. Bush just made up. He went to Yale and Harvard.
The first alcoholic.
Alcoholic in chief. And the biggest moron just made up words.
Made them up.
So this is just like, David Letterman made a whole career off of mocking George W. Bush. So they go to these schools. They don't earn an admission. They pass them through because their parents donate money and buy buildings and all these sorts of things. So I think the biggest thing I got out of Boston University was watching how rich white folks operate. So they never should have let me there. So whenever they want to say that we want affirmative action. They're just handing us things. So no, I can show you some people that just had things handed to them. I can show you people where if Jacob and I get stopped in the wrong neighborhood,
that's right,
and we're courteous to the police officer, we still face down on the ground. That's Whereas right. when I was in school, I saw white kids spit on cops, call them pigs, so telling me, wait, you know who my father is? Wait till I call my dad. I'm going to have your badge. And would do it, and they would let them go.
Correct.
They didn't put a nightstick on upside their head. They didn't throw them on the ground. They didn't do any of that. So they have a whole different reality than we have. They don't care. In fact, if Jacob uses that fine English language that he knows how to use in a traffic stop, he's subject to get thrown on the ground quicker because he's going to be accused of being a smartass.
Yeah. No, there's no question. Give me 1 second, guys. I got to sell a couple of things real quick, and then we can wrap this thing up.
Sell that tie. Go ahead and sell that tie.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, before we do the tie, I want to tell people that they can go for a great dinner tonight at Winty's in Chesterfield. Work hard, play hard. I like that. 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road, a little different sign up there today. They're trying to play with me, but that's okay. So Wendy's has everything you can imagine. They've got wings. They've got smoked meat. They've got cheeseburgers, hamburgers, salad, great pizza, you name it. But, you know, my favorite really is the baby back ribs and of course, the onion rings, which are phenomenal. And yeah, a little bit on the high calorie side, but really great food. And that's at Wendy's at 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road in Chesterfield Valley. And don't forget, if you go to Defiance, you're going to get the same great food at Wendy's, brand new Defiance Wendy's Roadhouse. And that's at 2999 South Highway 94. Everybody's trying to really bring me up to snuff on this thing, and that's great. And that is exactly where you need to go for dinner, and you'll find there is great food at Wendy's. Now, if you're interested in great jewelry, you can go where I was this afternoon, and that's 4506 Hampton. And at 4506 Hampton, you are going to find fabulous jewelry. Oh, look at this. You guys are playing with me today. Okay, and anyway, it's really great. They got all through there. You look at all the different cases of jewelry, and it's just excellent. Now, what they'll do is they'll actually create jewelry for you if you want. I mean, they're creative. Now, the other side is you come in there creative yourself and you say, this is what I want done. They'll create jewelry your way as well. Anything you say, they'll do, and they'll do it well. 4506 Hampton, that's Jewels on Hampton. And don't forget, they'll also fix your watch, and they are really good at it. I was watching today. I was in there, and they were fixing watches. They know what they're doing at Jewels on Hampton. And finally, as the guys pointed out, this is the tie that I picked up today from the St. Louis Suit Company. And the St. Louis Suit Company is on the corner of Forsyth and Central in Clayton. It has been there for 29 years, and they dress you beautifully. They make sure you've got all the best clothes. You don't pay the highest prices, and you know that when it comes to these ties, all my friends know $5 for a tie that Donald Trump would try to sell you for $50, which is why he's out of business. And at the same time, you put it around your neck, and it would probably choke you because, you know, that's just Trump's way of doing things. But the St. Louis Suit Company, they know what they're doing. They'll get you great clothes, men's clothes, outstanding. The sport jackets are really hot right now. That's what everybody wants. And by the way, if you're getting married, this is the place to go. They're really perfect when it comes to wedding attire at the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton. Okay, guys.
We wish you.
Now, my question, you heard
about some of that jewelry, Casey.
You heard those three ads. Here's my question. did I at least learn something from Onion Horton?
about selling jewelry and ties.
Yeah, a little bit.
But the only thing I would fail short, Kaysen.
What?
I want to see some bling on you.
Yeah.
Next show, you need to have a a necklace. What do you think, Jacob? A nice chain and a pinky ring.
I want to see him with some of that pig meat running across his lips. He's about to love some baby back ribs.
Yeah.
That's an all manner violation of the Book of Leviticus. What kind of Jew is you?
And get you a grill while you're in there, Casey.
No, wait a second. You know there's such a thing as beef ribs. You know that, right?
Oh, okay, okay. Clean
let's not get carried away here, guys. I mean, yeah, okay.
Oh, you threw me for a loop when you told me about them baby back ribs.
You got a snoot up under that desk right now.
That's right. I can see the barbecue stains on his shirt from her.
I mean, there are cows out here. They're you know, come on, right? Cows.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay.
That reminds me of the time you brought your pops, Jaime Kaysen, to meet the Hebrew boy.
That's right.
He was kind of shaking looking at the brother Jacob.
Yeah.
He's like, you know this guy?
And listen, I think you should know that Jaime and Iris at least now are together, because about 3 months ago, Iris, at 93 years old, same age as Willie Mays.
That's right.
So, you know, she went to the same place that I guess Willie's at right now, and the rest of them. Jaime's there, too. Yeah, exactly. And we were talking, Jacob, earlier about, the greatest outfield that you could imagine if you could put them together. You know, if you had Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and Roberto Clemente, I mean, imagine what kind of a team that would be.
It would be outstanding. Man, I was genuinely hurt when I pulled my phone out at 5 something this morning, started looking at a few news items and saw that Willie Mays had passed. Don't know why, but it struck me, and I shed a couple of tears for Willie Mays.
Yeah, I did too as well, Jacob. That was Willie Mays was probably my father's favorite player of all time. And he was, followed closely by Roberto Clemente. But my father used to say, man, Willie Mays, he said, that's a complete player. Because not only could he play that defense that you saw and
what
they've been showing. That's right. He covered that outfield, but he played defense. He could hit for average. He could hit with power. He could steal bases. I mean, there's nobody on the scene like that. And I think the only thing that I regret is that the lack of black players in Major League Baseball today to be able to celebrate him. I know he died a couple of days short of the game in Birmingham,
right,
where he was going to be. But I mean, I'm just happy that, you know, my father was a big fan. He took me to see Willie Mays on the back end of his career when he was playing with the Mets. So I'm fortunate that I got a chance to see him play. But I mean, he was even a more decent humanitarian, because if you think about this, the way they treated a black man during the time that he came up in the Negro Leagues and came into the league.
That's right.
He was not an activist in the traditional sense as some of the players, but he didn't turn down an autograph, white or black. He was kind every time you saw him. He was genuine and just a decent human being. So,
and by the way,
I was so happy when President Obama honored him.
Yeah, and by the way, he was given, and I don't know if it was the first one or one of the first ones, but he was given the Roberto Clemente Award, which, you know, was exactly as you point out, which is for humanitarian players that show, you know, a special desire to help humanity. And again, you know, when you're talking about, you know, sometimes people look at these players and I know every one of them isn't the greatest guy on the planet, but certainly the people that we're talking about were among the greatest people on the planet. And so it's a big deal. Yeah. There was one other thing I wanted to point out, in talking about, you know, the history of you know, people being murdered in the black community and so forth. You know, in 1876, the The president of the United States, of course, became President Samuel Tilden, right? Oh, I'm sorry. No. No, Samuel Tilden actually won the election, but lost. They threw him out, okay? So actually, the guy was Rutherford B. Hayes. So I'm just playing, but this is not a joke now. Rutherford B. Hayes, he made a deal with Congress. And the deal that he made with Congress is he said, look, if you pick me over this Samuel Tilden, who was the governor of New York, and Hayes was the governor of Ohio, and he said, look, you pick me to be the president instead of Tilden. He says, what I'll do is I'll take all those federal troops that you mentioned, Jacob, I'll take all those federal troops out of the South, and you can do whatever you want. And the Congress said, that's a bargain. We're going to take that deal. And it's exactly what they did. And that was the end of Reconstruction.
Absolutely. And that was when the Klan rode hard. And the children of the Klan are still in state legislatures. They're up in Congress. They're up in the Senate. And they still have the same white supremacist mindset of their ancestors. What you think, Brother Ingram?
Absolutely. And if we're not careful in this next election with this Supreme Court that we have stacked, we're going to be in this MAGA Congress that we have, we're going to be headed back in that same territory.
Man, we at the door. Go ahead.
These people want to dismantle government as we know it. So all these brothers and sisters, I understand everybody's not political and all these other things, but for selfish reasons, you need to get out here and vote. If you want to preserve any scintilla of what you consider to be democracy, you got to get out here and vote, because this fool that was in prior to Biden, he had a learning curve the first time that he came in. The second time if he gets back in, he's going to start where he left off with that insurrection. And he's going to dismantle this government like you wouldn't believe. I mean, believe if you don't believe anything he says. Now, he's a professional liar. But what he's not lying about is all of these vendettas that he has on his plate and on his mind. And he's going to enact it. He's going to put yes men around him. He's not going to have people to protect the government and protect us from him this next time. He's going to put yes men around him. And he's been stewing over this for 3 years about what he's going to do if he gets back in office.
So if you guys had to guess, what do you think? Do you think that Donald, because I have my thought, do you think Donald Trump is going to win or do you think he's going to lose? What do you think?
I have no idea. Because to me, remember, the presidential vote is not determined by the popular vote.
That's right.
It's determined by the Electoral College. I'll let Brother Ingram answer that.
I agree. I have no idea. I'm hoping that the decent people will get off their butts. The election, and let's understand this thing about politics. The campaign hadn't started yet. The politicians and pollsters, they understand this. Everybody's zoning out about now. School just let out. People are taking their little vacations and doing all this other stuff. And they got the 4th of July and Labor Day holiday that they got to get behind them. They haven't rolled out President Obama. They haven't rolled out Bill Clinton. They haven't rolled out Gavin Newsom. They haven't rolled out J.B. Pritzker on his campaign trail or Hillary to combat this stuff against Trump. The Lincoln Project hasn't rolled out their ads yet. I think, particularly after this sentencing, whatever that turns out to be at the beginning of July of Trump, in this debate that's in about a week, I think a lot of that's going to maybe sway some people, but I think the campaign hasn't started yet. And at this point, I think it's a toss-up, and it's going to depend on whether people think enough of this country to get off their butts and get out here and keep him from getting back into the White House. Optically, yeah, if we look at Joe Biden, he doesn't present as young as Trump does, even though they're kind of in the same age bracket. Trump is what the MAGA people like as being a son of a bitch. This is how he presents.
That's right.
He's got that vim and vigor of the a-hole that he is. But you've got Biden who kind of shuffles along, but I don't think his mind is deteriorated. I think he's mentally aware of what he's doing. And you know, he's just broken down from a physical standpoint. And because we live in an ageist society, that's the narrative that you're hearing right now, that they don't want somebody that's, you know, could possibly check out. But I think the goal is that, you know, this is a binary choice. Get RFK and all this other nonsense that people are saying, or Cornel West and all this other foolishness. People don't have a snowball's chance of hell of getting into office. We got a choice between Trump and Biden. And you got to figure out, do you want an insurrectionist and his clique back in office, or do you want someone who has some decency, some empathy about him in office? So that's the choice that we have in front of us. And I'm like Jacob, I have no idea at this point. I'm hoping for the best. I know what I'm going to do, and I know what I'm going to encourage people to do.
Yeah, I don't think Donald has a chance in hell. But let me say this: one of the people that's watching here wanted to mention Cool Papa Bell, whose batting average was .337, and I think you both probably know that the black averages have been brought in to the major leagues, and so they're included now. So all
it would have been better. It would have been better.
Sure would have been.
It would have been better if Josh Gibson had a chance to play in Yankee Stadium.
You bet.
It'd have been better if Satchel Paige in his prime had a chance to pitch against Babe Ruth and strike his ass out five times in the game.
Yep.
Because see, Willie Mays and Jackie Robinson and Frank Robinson and all them Willie McCoveys, all them greats, they proved that they was not only on par with the DiMaggio's and Ty Cobb's and Babe Ruth's, but were better athletes, more honed in their skills. And I think of Josh Gibson, man, can you imagine how heartbroken he was?
It killed him. It's one of the
literally
things when you talk
had to
you
go talk to Mexico to play.
It's one of the things that killed him.
No doubt.
That
no
he was
doubt.
That he did not allow he wasn't allowed to compete in his prime and to achieve what he could achieve. Just compare that to modern day sports now, where you see the black athlete excelling at every level in every sport where they're allowed to compete. And we excel because the playing field is level. When the rules are the same and we're given the same opportunity, we do well. So for those people who are hating right now and saying, how can you conflate the two? You've got these black stats and these white stats. How do we know? Well, you know, you're the one that kept them out of the league.
That's right.
You're the one that were afraid to compete against them. So that's what were right. you afraid of that you denied them? So I think it's long overdue. I'm happy to see it. And I'm glad that, you know, unfortunately, a little late, they're getting their just due.
Yeah. Listen, guys, there's no question. I mean, today is an important day for a lot of reasons. I guarantee you, you can go around the United States and you're not going to hear this conversation in a lot of places.
Probably not.
True.
Special.
Yeah.
Probably not.
You got a lot of people that are afraid, Mark.
Yeah.
And they have an agenda. They go back and they work on these plantations and they're afraid of what people think. And then again, they're terrified. They're terrified. They've seen people who speak out be punished severely. So they're not going to step out and have that kind of testicular fortitude. I'll keep it as clean as possible.
Yeah. Well, one thing also I want to point out, guys, which I tell my kids, I say kids, they're not kids, but anyway, students, you know, at school all the time, black students, you know, you go around the country and you see programs, you know, talk shows, and a lot of times you see programs where you have white programs, a lot of white people, and then every once in a while you get some black people that are allowed on. And you know, one of the things that I have done, even in just these months that we've been here, you know, this is a show where there are a lot of black people, and then sometimes some white people are allowed on too. So, you know, it's a very bizarre country, which, by the way, if you look at the Post-Dispatch today, they got an article on what's going on out in Francis Howe School District. And I at least, you know, for all the things that the Post has done wrong, I give them credit for putting that in today on Juneteenth. I don't think it was by accident. They want to make clear that all this anti-blackness in Missouri, in the Francis Howell School District, out in Wentzville, where they're banning books all over the place and they're all black. This is all getting rid of anything black that you can get rid of. And this state is really big on it. And on top of that, they're trying to close libraries out in St. Charles, and they're fighting over that right now. But the truth is that you got a lot of white people in this legislature who will do anything to shut these things down. And really, it's all aimed against black people. And you can argue, people will argue and say, you're just saying that, but it's...
No, it's the Ron DeSantis model.
Yeah.
The governor of Florida, the governor of Texas, all of these racist Republican, what I call heathens, who truly hate and despise us, are doing all in their power. Because remember, when Donald Trump say make America white again, make America great again, to me that means make America white again. They want to turn back the clock to the good old days. But I'm here to tell you, we ain't never going back there.
That's right.
Never.
And it's never. It's not a matter. He wants to make America hate again. And this is not an aberration in the state of Missouri. The two most liberal cities in the state of Missouri are Kansas City and St. Louis. And how many black radio hosts do you have on the air that can speak freely in the city of St. Louis?
Hell, I got banned off of every radio station in
think about
St. Louis 30 years ago.
Yeah, and they tried to ban me, Jacob, just because of you.
That's right. That's right. You're right, Abram. It's still that white supremacist mindset, man. Think about it. The guy that's running for attorney general, I'm Donald Trump's lawyer. Boy, they'll take that and run with it, won't they?
Yeah.
That's because of the mindset. Remember, they want to turn back the clock. They call it that wokeism. Ron DeSantis, he don't want Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, none of them, not one sentence read in a school in Florida. They want to erase any progress, so-called progress, we've ever made in this country. They want to do what Donald Trump is dog whistling to them folks. Make America white again. It's only one problem. Them days is over with.
I think they are. Few years,
you white folks going to be the minority in this country.
Oh, yeah.
It's happening.
We're talking about in less than 10
years. Y'all ain't having children fast enough. Go ahead, Brother Ingram.
In less than 10 years, I think the projections used to be by 2030 that they will be a minority in this country. You know, the Latinos have already surpassed us as the number one minority in this country. And white folks, they're about to get bumped back a little more because they're integrating a little bit too much.
Well, so see, the Mexicans, they used to own Arizona, Texas, California, New Mexico. So I don't blame them for running headlong back across the border. All they trying to do is reclaim what they once owned.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's theirs.
That's right.
Well, you know that Horton, the great Onion Horton, for years, you know, talked about how hopeless everything is. But actually, he didn't mean don't keep fighting. He meant that if you look at what's going on around you, you would think it's hopeless. But I do think that every once in a while, there's another step forward that's doing exactly what you've just described, Jacob. And I think that some of these people out here, I don't even think they realize. I mean, they want to fight against you, but I don't think they realize how truly limited their time is.
They know this is why they're fighting so hard. You know, and Onion knew that he lived in a former slave state. He knew that. And he knew
well, the Dred Scott decision was held right downtown at the old courthouse.
That's right.
We on the map for white supremacy round here. Let's not be fooled by a long shot.
Okay, guys, listen, I thank you so much for being here. You made the show absolutely fabulous. I really appreciate it. And for the St. Louis Suit Company and for Wendy's and for Jules on Hampton. We really appreciate you guys. I love you guys. I mean, all the years that we've worked together and so many other people who worked with us as well. And I'll see you guys soon.
Back at you, Kason. Later, Brother Jacob.
Good to see you again, Brother Ingham.
Shalom.
Shalom, y'all.
This is Showdown. Good night.